Chapter 1. Of the King of Oaken Realm, and his wife and his child. Of old there was a land which was so much a woodland, that a minstrel thereof said it that a squirrel might go from end to end, and all about, from tree to tree, and never touch the earth, therefore was that land called Oaken Realm. The lord and king thereof was a stark man, and so great a warrior that in his youth he took no delight in aught else save battle and tourneys. But when he was hard on 40 years old, he came across a daughter of a certain lord, whom he had vanquished, and his eyes bewrayed him into longing, so that he gave back to the said lord the havings he had conquered of him that he might lay the maiden in his kingly bed. So he brought her home with him to Oaken Realm and wedded her. Tells the tale that he rued not his bargain, but loved her so dearly that for a year round he wore no armor, save when she bade him play in the tilt yard for her disport and pride. So wore the days till she went with child and was near her time, and then it beated that 3 kings who marched on Oaken Realm banded them together against him, and his lords and thanes cried out on him to lead them to battle, and it behoved him to do as they would. So he sent out the tokens and bade an hosting at his chief city, and when all was ready he said farewell to his wife and her babe unborn, and went his ways to battle once more, but fierce was his heart against the Fenian, that they had dragged him away from his love and his joy. Even amidst of his land he joined battle with the host of the ravagers, and the tale of them is short to tell, for they were as the wheat before the hook. But as he followed up the chase, a mere thrall of the fleers turned on him and cast his spear, and it reached him whereas his hauberk was broken, and stood deep in, so that he fell to earth unmighty, and when his lords and chieftains drew about him, and cunning men strove to heal him, it was of no avail, and he knew that his soul was departing. Then he sent for a priest, and for the marshal of the host, who was a great lord, and the son of his father's brother, and in few words bade him look to the babe whom his wife bore about, and if it were a man, to cherish him and do him to learn all that a king ought to know, and if it were a maiden, that he should look to her wedding well and worthily, and he let swear him on his sword, on the edges and the hilts, that he would do even so, and be true unto his child if child there were, and he bade him have rule, if so be the lord's would, and all the people, till the child were of age to be king, and the marshal swore, and all the lords who stood around bare witness to his swearing. Thereafter the priest houseled the king, and he received his creator, and a little while after his soul departed. But the marshal followed up the fleeing foe, and 2 battles more he fought before he beat them flat to earth, and then they craved for peace, and he went back to the city in mickle honour. But in the king's city of Oakenham he found but little joy, for both the king was bemoaned, whereas he had been no hard man to his folk, and also, when the tidings and the king's corpse came back to Oaken Realm, his lady and queen took sick for sorrow and fear, and fell into labour of her child, and in childing of a man barren she died, but the lad lived, and was like to do well. So there was 1 funeral for the slain king and for her whom his slaying had slain, and when that was done, the little king was born to the font, and at his christening he gat to name Christopher. Thereafter the marshal summoned all them that were due thereto to come and give homage to the new king, and even so did they, though he were but a babe, yea, and who had but just now been a king lying in his mother's womb. But when the homage was done, then the marshal called together the wise men, and told them how the king that was had given him in charge his son as then unborn, and the ruling of the realm till the said son were come to man's estate, but he bade them seek one worthier if they had heart to gainsay the word of their dying lord. Then all they said that he was worthy and mighty and the choice of their dear lord, and that they would have none but he. So then was the great folk mote called, and the same matter was laid before all the people, and none said aught against it, whereas no man was ready to name another to the charge and rule, even had it been his own self. Now then by law was the marshal, who hight Rolf, lord and earl of the land of Oaken Realm. He ruled well and strongly, and was a fell warrior, he was well befriended by many of the great, and the rest of them feared him and his friends, as for the commonalty, they saw that he held the realm in peace, and for the rest, they knew little and saw less of him, and they paid to his bailiffs and sheriffs as little as they could, and more than they would. But whereas that left them somewhat to grind their teeth on, and they were not harried, they were not so ill content. So the marshal throve, and lacked nothing of a king's place save the bare name. Chapter 2. Of the King's Son. As for the king's son, to whom the folk had of late done homage as king, he was at first seen about a corner of the high house with his nurses, and then in a while it was said, and the tale noted, but not much, that he must needs go for his health's sake, and because he was puny, to some stead amongst the fields, and folk heard say that he was gone to the strong house of a knight somewhat stricken in years, who was called Lord Richard de Lean. The said house was some 12 miles from Oakenham, not far from the northern edge of the wild wood. But in a while, scarce more than a year, Lord Richard brake up house at the said castle, and went southward through the forest. Of this departure was little said, for he was not a man amongst the foremost. As for the king's little son, if any remembered that he was in the hands of the said Lord Richard, none said aught about it, for if any thought of the little babe at all, they said to themselves, never will he come to be king. Now as for Lord Richard the Lean, he went far through the wood, and until he was come to another house of his, that stood in a clearing somewhat near to where Oakenrealm marched on another country, which hight Meetham, though the said wild wood ended not where Oakenrealm ended, but stretched a good way into Meetham, and betwixt one and the other much rough country there was. It is to be said that amongst those who went to this stronghold of the woods was the little King Christopher, no longer puny, but a stout babe enough, so he was born amongst the serving men and thralls to the castle of the Outer March, and he was in no wise treated as a great man's son, but there was more than one woman who was kind to him, and as he waxed in strength and beauty month by month, both Carl and Queen fell to noting him, and, for as little as he was, he began to be well beloved. As to the stead where he was nourished, though it were far away amongst the woods, it was no such lonely or savage place. Besides the castle and the houses of it, there was a merry thorp in the clearing, the houses whereof were set down by the side of a clear and pleasant little stream. Moreover, the goodmen and swains of the said township were no ill folk, but bold of heart, free of speech, and goodly of favour, and the women of them fair, kind, and trusty. Whiles came folk journeying into Oakenrealm or out to meet him, and of these some were minstrels, who had with them tidings of what was astir whereas folk were thicker in the world, and some chapmen, who chaffered with the thorp dwellers, and took of them the woodland spoil for such outland goods as those woodmen needed. So wore the years, and in Oakenham King Christopher was well nigh forgotten, and in the wild wood had never been known clearly for king's son. At first, by command of Rolf the Marshal, a messenger came every year from Lord Richard with a letter that told of how the lad Christopher did. But when 5 years were worn, the Marshal bade send him tidings thereof every 3 years, and by then it was come to the 12th year, and still the tidings were that the lad throve ever, and meanwhile the Marshal sat fast in his seat with none to gainsay. The word went to Lord Richard that he should send no more, for that he, the Marshal, had heard enough of the boy, and if he throve it were well, and if not, it was no worse. So wore the days and the years. Chapter 3. Of the King of Meetham and his daughter. Tells the tale that in the country which lay south of Oakenrealm, and was called Meetham, there was in these days a king whose wife was dead, but had left him a fair daughter, who was born some 4 years after King Christopher. A good man was this King Roland, mild, bounteous, and no regardé of persons in his justice, and well beloved he was of his folk, yet could not their love keep him alive, for, when as his daughter was of the age of 12 years, he sickened unto death, and so, when he knew that his end drew near, he sent for the wisest of his wise men, and they came unto him sorrowing in the high house of his chiefest city, which hight Medhamstead. So he bade them sit down nigh unto his bed, and took up the word and spake. Masters, and my good lords, ye may see clearly that a sundering is at hand, and that I must needs make a long journey, whence I shall come back never. Now I would, and am verily of duty bound thereto, that I leave behind me some good order in the land. Furthermore, I would that my daughter, when she is of age thereto, should be queen in Meetham, and rule the land. Neither will it be many years before she shall be of ripe age for ruling, if ever she may be, and I deem not that there shall be any lack in her, whereas her mother could all courtesy, and was as wise as a woman may be. But how say ye, my masters? So they all with one consent said yea, and they would ask for no better king than their lady his daughter. Then said the king, hearken carefully, for my time is short, yet is she young and a maiden, though she be wise. Now therefore do I need some man well looked to of the folk, who shall rule the land in her name till she be of 18 winters, and who shall be her good friend and counselor into all wisdom thereafter. Which of you, my masters, is meet for this matter? Then they all looked one on the other, and spake not. And the king said, speak, some one of you, without fear, this is no time for tarrying. Thereon spake an elder, the oldest of them, and said, Lord, this is the very truth, that none of us here present are meet for this office, whereas, among other matters, we be all unmeet for battle. Some of us have never been warriors, and others some are past the age for leading an host. To say the sooth, king, there is but one man in Meetham who may do what thou wilt, and not fail, both for his wisdom, and his might afield, and the account which is had of him amongst the people, and that man is Earl Geoffrey, of the Southern Marches. Ye say sooth, quoth the king, but is he down in the south, or nigher to hand? Said the elder, he is as now in Medhamstead, and may be in this chamber in scant half an hour. So the king bade send for him, and there was silence in the chamber till he came in, clad in a scarlet kirtle and a white cloak, and with his sword by his side. He was a tall man, bigly made, somewhat pale of face, black and curly of hair, blue-eyed, thin-lipped, and hook-nosed as an eagle, a man warrior-like, and somewhat fierce of aspect. He knelt down by the king's bedside, and asked him in a sorrowful voice what he would, and the king said, "I ask a great matter of thee, and all these my wise men, and I myself, withal, deem that thou canst do it, and thou alone nay, hearken, I am departing, and I would have thee hold my place, and do unto my people even what I would do if I myself were living, and to my daughter as nigh to that as may be. I say all this thou mayst do, if thou wilt be as trusty and leal to me after I am dead, as thou hast seemed to all men's eyes to have been while I was living. What sayest thou?" The earl had hidden his face in the coverlet of the bed while the king was speaking, but now he lifted up his face, weeping, and said, "Kinsman and friend and king, this is not hard to do, but if it were, yet would I do it." "It is well," said the king, "my heart fails me and my voice, so give heed, and set thine ear close to my mouth, hearken, belike my daughter Goldilin shall be one of the fairest of women, I bid thee wed her to the fairest of men and the strongest, and to none other." Thereat his voice failed him indeed, and he lay still, but he died not, till presently the priest came to him, and, as he might, houseled him, then he departed. As for Earl Geoffrey, when the king was buried, and the homages done to the maiden Goldilin, he did no worse than those wise men deemed of him, but bestirred him, and looked full sagely into all the matters of the kingdom, and did so well therein that all men praised his rule perforce, whether they loved him or not, and sooth to say he was not much beloved. Chapter 4. Of the Maiden Goldilin. Amidst of all his other business Earl Geoffrey bethought him in a while of the dead king's daughter, and he gave her in charge to a gentlewoman, somewhat stricken in years, a widow of high lineage, but not over wealthy. She dwelt in her own house in a fair valley some 20 miles from Medhemstead. There abode Goldilin till a year and a half was worn, and had due observance, but little love, and not much kindness from the said gentlewoman, who hight Dame Eleanor Lesho. Howbeit, time and again came knights and ladies and lords to see the little lady, and kissed her hand and did obeisance to her, yet more came to her in the first 3 months of her sojourn at Lesho than the second, and more in the second than the third. At last, on a day when the said year and a half was fully worn, thither came Earl Geoffrey with a company of knights and men-at-arms, and he did obeisance, as due was, to his master's daughter, and then spake a while privily with Dame Eleanor, and thereafter they went into the hall, he, and she, and Goldilin, and there before all men he spake aloud and said, "My lady Goldilin, meseemeth ye dwell here all too straitly, for neither is this house of Lesho great enough for thy state, and the entertainment of the knights and lords who shall have will to seek to thee hither, nor is the wealth of thy liege dame and governant as great as it should be, and as thou, meseemeth, wouldst have it. Wherefore I have been considering thy desires herein, and if thou deem it meet to give a gift to Dame Eleanor, and live queenlier thyself than now thou dost, then mayst thou give unto her the castle of Green Harbor, and the 6 manors appertaining thereto, and with all the rights of wild wood and fen and fell that lie thereabout. Also, if thou wilt, thou mayst honor the said castle with abiding there a while at thy pleasure, and I shall see to it that thou have due money to go with thee thither. How sayest thou, my lady?" Amongst that company there were 2 or 3 who looked at each other and half smiled, and 2 or 3 looked on the maiden, who was goodly as of her years, as if with compassion, but the more part kept countenance in full courtly wise. Then spake Goldilin in a quavering voice, for she was afraid and wise, and she said, "Cousin and Earl, we will that all this be done, and it likes me well to eke the wealth of this lady and my good friend Dame Eleanor." Quoth Earl Geoffrey, "Kneel before thy lady, Dame, and put thine hands between hers and thank her for the gift." So Dame Eleanor knelt down, and did homage and obeisance for her new land, and Goldilin raised her up and kissed her, and bade her sit down beside her, and spake to her kindly, and all men praised the maiden for her gentle and courteous ways, and Dame Eleanor smiled upon her and them, what she could. She was small of body and sleek, but her cheeks somewhat flagging, brown eyes she had, long, half-opened, thin lips, and chin somewhat falling away from her mouth, hard on 50 winters had she seen, yet there have been those who were older and goodlier both. Chapter 5. Goldilin comes to Green Harbor. But a little while tarried the Earl Geoffrey at Lesho, but departed next morning and came to Medhemstead. A month thereafter came folk from him to Lesho, to wit, the new meinie for the new abode of Goldilin, amongst whom was a goodly band of men-at-arms, led by an old lord pinched and peevish of face, who kneeled to Goldilin as the new burgrave of Green Harbor, and a chaplain, a black canon, young, broad-cheeked and fresh-looking, but hard-faced and unlovely, 3 new damsels withal were come for the young queen, not young maids, but stalwart women, well-grown, and 2 of them hard-featured, the 3rd, tall, black-haired, and a goodly fashioned body. Now when these were come, who were all under the rule of Dame Eleanor, there was no gainsaying the departure to the new home, and in 2 days' time they went their ways from Leashow. But though Goldie Lind was young, she was wise, and her heart misgave her, when she was amidst this new many, that she was not riding toward glory and honor, and the world of worship and friends beloved. Howbeit, whatso might lie before her, she put a good face upon it, and did to those about her queenly and with all courtesy. 5 days they rode from Leashow north away, by thorpe and town and mead and river, till the land became little peopled, and the 6th day they rode the wild wood ways, where was no folk, save now and again the little cot of some forester or collier, but the 7th day, about noon, they came into a clearing of the wood, a rugged little plain of lea land, mingled with marish, with a little deal of acreland and barley and rye, round about a score of poor frame houses set down scattermeal about the lea. But on a long ridge, at the northern end of the said plain, was a grey castle, strong, and with big and high towers, yet not so much greater than was Leashow, deemed Goldie Lind, as for a dwelling house. Howbeit, they entered the said castle, and within, as without, it was somewhat grim, though naught was lacking of plenishing due for folk nightly. Long it were to tell of its walls and baileys and chambers, but let this suffice, that on the north side, toward the thick forest, was a garden of greensward and flowers and potherbs, and a garth wall of grey stone, not very high, was the only defence thereof toward the wood, but it was overlooked by a tall tower of the great wall, which hight the Forester's Tower. In the said outer garth wall also was a postern, whereby there was not seldom coming in and going out. Now when Goldie Lind had been in her chamber for a few days, she found out for certain, what she had before misdoubted, that she had been brought from Leashow and the peopled parts near to Medhemstead unto the uttermost parts of the realm to be kept in prison there. Howbeit, it was in a way prison courteous, she was still served with observance, and bowed before, and called my lady and queen, and so forth, also she might go from chamber to hall and chapel, to and fro, yet scarce alone, and into the garden she might go, yet not for the more part unaccompanied, and even at whiles she went out a gates, but then ever with folk on the right hand and the left. Forsooth, whiles and again, within the next 2 years of her abode at Green Harbour, out of gates she went and alone, but that was as the prisoner who strives to be free, although she had, forsooth, no thought or hope of escape, and as the prisoner brought back was she chastised when she came within gates again. Everywhere, to be short, within and about the castle of Green Harbour, did Goldie Lind meet the will and the tyranny of the little sleek widow, Dame Eleanor, to whom both carle and queen in that corner of the world were but as servants and slaves to do her will, and the said Eleanor, who at first was but spiteful in word and looked toward her lady, waxed worse as time wore and as the blossom of the king's daughter's womanhood began to unfold, till at last the she-jailer had scarce feasted any day when she had not in some wise grieved and tormented her prisoner, and whatever she did, none had might to say her nay. But Goldie Lind took all with a high heart, and her courage grew with her years, nor would she bow the head before any grief, but took to her whatsoever solace might come to her, as the pleasure of the sun and the wind, and the beholding of the greenery of the wood, and the fowl and the beasts playing, which oft she saw afar, and whiles anear, though whiles, forsooth, she saw not of it all, whereas she was shut up betwixt four walls, and that not of her chamber, but of some bare and foul prison of the castle, which, with other griefs, must she needs thole under the name and guise of penance. However, she waxed so exceeding fair and sweet and lovely, that the loveliness of her pierced to the hearts of many of her jailers, so that some of them, and specially of the squires and men-at-arms, would do her some easement which they might do unrebuked, or not sorely rebuked, as bringing her flowers in the spring, or whiles a singing bird or a squirrel, and an old man there was of the men-at-arms, who would ask leave, and get it at whiles, to come to her in her chamber, or the garden, and tell her minstrel tales and the like for her joyance. Sooth to say, even the pinched heart of the old burgher was somewhat touched by her, and he alone had any might to stand between her and Dame Eleanor, so that but for him it had gone much harder with her than it did. For the rest, none entered the castle from the world without, nay not so much as a travelling monk, or a friar on his wanderings, save and except some messenger of Earl Geoffrey who had errand with Dame Eleanor or the Burgerf. So wore the days and the seasons, till it was now more than 4 years since she had left Leashow, and her 18th summer was beginning. But now the tale leaves telling of Goldie Lind, and goes back to the matters of Oaken Realm, and therein to what has to do with King Christopher and Rolf the Marshal. Chapter 6. How Rolf the Marshal dreams a dream and comes to the castle of the uttermost march. Now this same summer, when King Christopher was of 20 years and 2, Rolf the Marshal, sleeping one noontide in the king's garden at Oakenham, dreamed a dream. For him seemed that there came through the garth gate a woman fair and tall, and clad in naught but oaken leaves, who led by the hand an exceeding goodly young man of 20 summers, and his visage like to the last battle-dead king of Oaken Realm when he was a young man. And the said woman led the swain up to the marshal, who asked in his mind what these two were, and the woman answered his thought and said, "I am the woman of the woods, and the land wide of Oaken Realm, and this lovely lad whose hand I hold is my king and thy king and the king of Oaken Realm. Wake, fool, awake, and look to it what thou wilt do." And therewith he woke up crying out, and drew forth his sword. But when he was fully awakened, he was ashamed, and went into the hall, and sat in his high seat, and strove to think out of his troubled mind, but for all he might do, he fell asleep again, and again in the hall he dreamed as he had dreamed in the garden, and when he awoke from his dream he had no thought in his head but how he might the speediest come to the house of Lord Richard the Lean, and look to the matter of his lord's son and see him with his eyes, and, if it might be, take some measure with the threat which lay in the lad's life. Naught he tarried, but set off in an hour's time with no more company than 4 men-at-arms and an old squire of his, who was wont to do his bidding without question, whether it were good or evil. So they went by frith and fell, by wood and fairways, till in 2 days' time they were come by under and within sight of the castle of the Outer March, and entered into the street of the thorpe aforesaid, and they saw that there were no folk therein and at the house doors save old Carlos and Carline scarce wayworthy, and little children who might not go afoot. But from the field anigh the thorpe came the sound of shouting and glad voices, and through the lanes of the houses they saw on the field many people in gay raiment going to and fro, as though there were games and sports toward. Thereof Lord Rolf heeded not, but went his ways straight to the castle, and was brought with all honour into the hall, and thither came Lord Richard the Lean, hastening and half afeard, and did obeisance to him, and there were but a few in the hall, and they stood out of earshot of the two lords. The marshal spoke graciously to Lord Richard, and made him sit beside him, and said in a soft voice, "We have come to see thee, Lord, and how the folk do in the uttermost marches. Also we would wot how it goes with a lad whom we sent to thee when he was yet a babe, whereas he was some by blow of the late king, our lord and master, and we deemed thee both rich enough and kind enough to breed him and to thriving without increasing pride upon him, and, firstly, is the lad yet alive?" He knitted his brow as he spake, for carefulness of soul, but Lord Richard smiled upon him, though as one somewhat troubled, and answered, "Lord Marshal, I thank thee for visiting this poor house, and I shall tell thee first that the lad lives, and hath thriven marvellously, though he be somewhat unruly, and will abide no correction now these last 6 years. Sooth to say, there is now no story of his being anywise akin to our late Lord King, though true it is that the folk in this far-away corner of the land call him King Christopher, but only in a manner of jesting. But it is no jest wherein they say that they will gainsay him not, and that especially the young women. Yet I will say of him that he is wise, and ask it not overmuch, the more is the sorrow of many of the maidens. A fell woodsman he is, and exceeding stark, and as yet heedeth more of valiance than of the love of woman." The marshal looked no less troubled than before at these words, he said, "I would see this young man speedily." "So shall it be, Lord," said Lord Richard. Therewith he called to him a squire, and said, "Go thou down into the thorpe, and bring hither Christopher, for that a great lord is here who would set him to do a deed of woodcraft, such as is more than the wont of men." So the squire went his ways, and was gone a little while, and meantime drew nigh to the hall a sound of triumphing songs and shouts, and right up to the hall doors, then entered the squire, and by his side came a tall young man, clad but in a white linen shirt and deerskin brogues, his head crowned with a garland of flowers, whom the squire brought up to the lords on the dais, and lauded to them, and said, "My lords, I bring you Christopher, and he not overwilling, for now hath he been but just crowned king of the games down yonder, but when the Carlos and queens there said that they would come with him and bear him company to the hall doors, then, forsooth, he yea said the coming. It were not unmeet that some shame were done him."
"Peace, man," said Lord Richard, "what hath this to do with thee? Seest thou not the Lord Marshal here?" The Lord Rolf sat and gazed on the lad, and scowled on him, but Christopher saw therein naught but the face of a great lord burdened with many cares, so when he had made his obeisance he stood up fearlessly and merrily before them. Sooth to say, he was full fair to look on, for all his strength, which, as ye shall hear, was mighty, all the fashion of his limbs and his body was light and clean done, and beauteous, and though his skin, where it showed naked, was all tanned with the summer, it was fine and sleek and kindly, every deal thereof, bright-eyed and round-cheeked he was, with full lips and carven chin, and his hair golden brown of hue, and curling crisp about the blossoms of his garland. So must we say that he was such an youngling as most might have been in the world, had not man's malice been,
and the mischief of grudging and the marring of grasping. But now spake Lord Rolf, Sir Varlet, they tell me that thou art a mighty hunter, and of mickle guile and woodcraft, wilt thou then hunt somewhat for me, and bring me home a catch seldom seen?
Yea, Lord King, said Christopher, I will at least do my best, if thou but tell me where to seek the quarry and when.
It is well, said the marshal, and tomorrow my squire, whom thou seest yonder, and who hides Simon, shall tell thee where the hunt is up, and thou shalt go with him. But hearken. Thou shalt not call me king, for today there is no king in Oaken Realm, and I am but marshal, and earl of the king that shall be. The lad fell a musing for a minute, and then he said, Yea, Lord Marshal, I shall do thy will, but meseemeth I have heard some tale of one who was but of late king in Oaken Realm, is it not so, Lord?
Stint thy talk, young man, cried the marshal in a harsh voice, and abide tomorrow, who knoweth who shall be king, and whether thou or I shall live to see him.
But as he spake the words they seemed to his heart like a foretelling of evil, and he turned pale and trembled, and said to Christopher, Come hither, lad, I will give thee a gift, and then shalt thou depart till tomorrow. So Christopher drew near to him, and the marshal pulled off a ring from his finger and set it on the lad's, and said to him, Now depart in peace. And Christopher bent the knee to him and thanked him for the gracious gift of the ruler of Oaken Realm, and then went his ways out of the hall, and the folk without gave a glad cry as he came amongst them. But by then he was come to the door, Lord Rolf looked on his hand, and saw that, instead of giving the youngling a finger ring which he had bought of a merchant for a price of 5 bezants, as he had meant to do, he had given him a ring which the old king had had, whereon was the first letter of his name, Christopher to wit, and a device of a crowned rose, for this ring was a signet of his. Wherefore was the marshal once more sore troubled, and he arose, and was half-minded to run down the hall after Christopher, but he refrained him, and presently smiled to himself, and then fell a talking to Lord Richard, sweetly and pleasantly. So wore the day to evening, but, ere he went to bed, the Lord Rolf had a privy talk, first with Lord Richard, and after with his squire Simon. What followed of that talk you may hear after.
Chapter 7. How Christopher went a journey into the wild wood.
Next morning Christopher, who slept in the little hall of the inner court of the castle, arose betimes, and came to the great gate, but, for as early as he was, there he saw the squire Simon abiding him, standing between two strong horses, to whom he gave the sally of the day, and the squire greeted him, but in somewhat surly wise. Then he said to him, Well, King Christopher, art thou ready for the road?
Yea, as thou seest, said the youngling smiling. For, indeed, he had breeches now beneath his shirt, and a surcoat of green woolen over it, boots of deerskin had he withal, and spurs thereon. He was girt with a short sword, and had a quiver of arrows at his back, and bare a great bow in his hand.
Yea, quoth Simon, thou deemest thee a gay swain belike, but thou lookest likelier for a deer stealer than a rider, thou, hung up to thy shooting gear. Deemest thou we go a hunting of the hind?
Quoth Christopher, I want not, squire, but the great lord who lieth sleeping yonder, hath told me that thou shouldest give me his errand, and of some hunting or feat of woodcraft he spake. Moreover, this crooked stick can drive a shaft through matters harder than a hind's side.
Simon looked confused, and he reddened and stammered somewhat as he answered, Ah, yea, so it was, I mind me, I will tell thee anon. Said Christopher, Withal, squire, if we are wending into the wood, as needs we must, unless we ride round about this dale in a ring all day, dost thou deem we shall go at a gallop many a mile?
Nay, fair sir, the horses shall wend a foot's pace oftenest, and we shall go a foot not unseldom through the thickets.
Now was Simon come to himself again, and that self was surly, so he said, Eh, little king, thou deemest thee exceeding wise in these woods, dost thou not? And forsooth, thou mayst be. Yet have I tidings for thee.
Yea, and what be they? Said Christopher.
Simon grinned, Even these, said he, that Dr. Knowall was no man's cousin while he lived, and that he died last week. Therewith he swung himself into his saddle, and Christopher laughed merrily at his poor jibe and mounted in likewise. Wherewithal they rode their ways through the thorp, and at the southern end thereof Simon drew rein, and looked on Christopher as if he would ask him something, but asked not. Then said Christopher, Whither go we now?
Said Simon, It is partly for thee to say, Hearken, I am bidden first to ride the Redwater Wood with thee, knowest thou that?
Yea, said the lad, full well, but which way shall we ride it? Wilt thou come out of it at Redwater Head, or Herne Moss, or the Long Pools?
Said Simon, We shall make for the Long Pools, if thou canst bring me there. Christopher laughed. "Aha," said he, "then am I some far-away cousin of Dr. Know-All when the whole tale is told? Forsooth, I can lead thee thither, but tell me, what shall I do of valiant deeds at the Long Pools? For there is no fire drake nor effet, nay, nor no giant, nor guileful dwarf, naught save mallard and coot, heron and bittern, yea, and ague shivers to boot." Simon looked sourly on him and said, "Thou art bidden to go with me, young man, or gainsay the marshal. Art thou mighty enough thereto? For the rest, fear not but that the deeds shall come to thee one day." "Nay," said Christopher, "it is all one to me, for I am at home in these woods and wastes, I in my shafts. Tell me of the deeds when thou wilt." But indeed he longed to know the deed, and fretted him because of Simon's surliness and closeness. Then he said, "Well, Squire Simon, let us to the road, for thou shalt know that tonight we must needs house us under the naked heaven, in no wise can we come to the Long Pools before tomorrow morning." "Yea, and why not?" said the squire, "I have lain in worse places." "Wilt thou tell me thereof?" said Christopher. "May happen," said Simon, "if tomorrow comes and goes for both of us twain." So they rode their ways through the wood, and baited at midday with what Simon bare in his saddlebags, and then went on till night fell on them. Then asked Simon how long they were from the Long Pools, and Christopher told him that they were yet short of them some 15 miles, and those long ones, because of the marish grounds. So they tethered their horses there and ate their supper, and lay down to sleep in the house of the woods, by a fireside which they lighted. But in the midnight Christopher, who was exceeding fine-eared, had an inkling of someone moving afoot anigh him, and he awoke therewith, and sprang up, his drawn short sword in his hand, and found himself face to face with Simon, and he also with his sword drawn. Simon sprang aback, but held up his sword point, and Christopher, not yet fully awake, cried out, "What wouldst thou? What is it?" Simon answered, stammering and all abashed, "Didst thou not hear then? It wakened me." "I heard not," said Christopher, "what was it?"
"Horses going in the wood," said Simon.
"Ah, yea," said Christopher, "it will have been the wild colts and the mares, they harbor about these marshland parts. Go to sleep again, neighbor, the night is not yet half worn, but I will watch a while." Then Simon sheathed his sword, and turned about and stood uneasily a little while, and then cast him down as one who would sleep hastily, but slept not forsooth, though he presently made semblance of it. As for Christopher, he drew together the brands of the fire, and sat beside it with his blade over his knees, until the first beginning of the summer dawn was in the sky. Then he began to nod, and presently lay aback and slept soundly. Simon slept not, but durst not move. So they lay till it was broad day, and the sunbeams came thrusting through the boughs of the thicket. Chapter 8. Christopher comes to the Dofts. When they arose in the sunshine, Simon went straightway to see to the horses, while Christopher stayed by the fire to diet their victuals. He was merry enough, and sang to himself the while, but when Simon came back again, Christopher looked on him sharply, but for a while Simon would not meet his eye, though he asked divers questions of him concerning little matters, as though he were fain to hear Christopher's voice. At last he raised his eyes, and looked on him steadily, and then Christopher said, "Well, wayfarer mine, and whither away this morning?" Said Simon, "As thou wottest, to the Long Pools." Said the lad, "Well, thou keepest thy tidings so close, that I will ask thee no more till we come to the Long Pools, since there, forsooth, thou must needs tell me, unless we sunder company there, whereof I were not grieving." "Mayhappen thou shalt fare a long way today," muttered Simon. But the lad cried out aloud, while his eye glittered and his cheek flushed, "Belike thou hadst well nigh opened the door thereto last night." And therewith he leapt to his feet and drew his short sword, and with three deft strokes sheared asunder an overhanging beech bough as thick as a man's wrist, that it fell crashing down, and caught Simon amongst the fall of its leafy twigs, while Christopher stood laughing on him, but with a dangerous lofty look in his eye.